when God decided to love you, he wasn't content to sort of love you at a distance. He wanted to get up close when that happened, which is why Christ took on human flesh.
Pastor Hans Feeney of Lutheran Satire talking about his presentation at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
But even after Christ ascended to the right hand of the Father, God still wanted to dwell with you through the flesh and blood of his Son. He wanted to be physically present and in the room when he covered you in forgiveness and life and salvation. So that's why he's given his church the Lord's Supper, and that's why we should rejoice every time God comes into the room and invites us to feast on the same flesh and the same blood that won our salvation at Calvary.
You can meet and hear Pastor Hans Feeney making the case for the Lord's Supper at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 7th and 8th in Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org. I spend every weekday morning with my grandchildren, 3, 2, and a newborn infant. And oddly enough, the 3-year-old doesn't do this, but the 2-year-old will routinely try to pick my pocket. He will reach up, or if he's sitting next to me, he will surreptitiously bring his little hand into my front pocket. He wants what's in there. He knows what's in there. It's my cell phone. He wants that phone more than anything in the world. Now, more often than not, he doesn't get it. I find some other way of entertaining him or distracting him, because if I give him the phone, I know exactly what will happen. I will have an hour of complete tranquility and peace, but he will enter into a catatonic state watching one YouTube video after another. And yes, he does know how to use the phone even at 2. So how do you go less screen dependent, addicted, or maybe even screen free with your kids? Welcome back to Issues Etc. Joy Pullman joins us to talk about going screen free with your children. She's managing editor of The Federalist and author of the book The Education Invasion, and a recent column titled Why You Should Plan a Low Screen Summer for Your Kids. Joy, welcome back.
Hi.
Give us the numbers. How much time do Americans and their kids actually spend looking at screens?
According to Common Sense Media, which is an organization that tracks this and issues annual reports, kids that are ages 2 to 6 spend an average of almost 3 hours daily looking at screens. And this is kids 8 to 12 spend an average of 4.5 hours a day doing the same. And the numbers for teenagers are more than six hours a day on average. So for the little kids, we're talking part-time hours looking at a screen. And for the big kids, we're talking a full-time job's worth of time looking at YouTube, fooling around on their screens, Instagramming, Snapchatting, whatever. And it's important to understand that those numbers, those are just for things like, YouTube and screens. That does not include listening to music, or listening to podcasts or all those audio things. We're talking staring at a screen time is that massive amount of time per week.
What does the research so far, because this is, relatively speaking, a very new and kind of quickly moving phenomenon, but what does the research so far tell us about the effects of using technology this way?
Well, actually, if we only look at tablets, of course, it's a new phenomenon. But if you include television in screen watching, of course, we have many more decades of data. And I think it's just the fact that cell phones, tablets, laptops, those all, of course, increase the kind of addiction potentiality because they're the engagement factor, the pinching, the swiping, the reacting to whatever's on the screen. So, the research on that specific activity as opposed to just passively ingesting something like a video is saying that it really, it has a lot of negative consequences. It can be used well, of course, it's just a tool and I don't think it's inherently evil. But we're finding, for example, that there's a lot of mental problems that are correlated with higher screen use, depression, self-harm, as well as, addictive behaviors are correlated. So if you stare at your screen a lot, you're more likely to do something like smoking or trying drugs. So there's a lot of those sorts of behaviors, of course, as well as all the kind of well-publicized sort of bullying activity, the mean girl stuff that seems to be kind of amplified by the fact that, when you're not looking at someone saying something, when you're posting it online, it's more likely to be something cruel. And kids often will take it to heart and do terrible things as a result. And then, of course, there's all kinds of things. There's attention problems. You know, there's a definitely documented decrease in what they call executive function in kids, so the ability to basically have self-control, to direct their own behavior, to choose what they're going to do, which, of course, is really important for relationships, for schoolwork, for being an active part of the world. That's, you know, directly attacked by, you know, spending a lot of time staring at screens.
So talk about something that's near and dear to your heart, that is education. Talk about how public schools have gone all in for all kinds of tech in the classroom.
Well, at this point, more than half of the nation's public schools have what they call a one-to-one program. That's where, you know, using taxpayer dollars, the public school district has bought one screen or device for every single child that is in their schools. And of course, you know, many more, beyond that number, outside of that, more than half schools have, you know, lots and lots of computers, things like, you know, computer labs for students and so forth. So the saturation of computers in schools is extremely high. And, you know, in the school districts around me, they do what is very typical. They not only have a one-to-one program, but, I mean, a friend of mine is a substitute teacher in the early elementary grade. She says kindergartners are looking at their screens, playing games in school for half of their day. This is the best district, you know, in my town, in my area, that's possible for people to live in and still live in my town. And that's really kind of, that's pretty standard all across the country, to be spending that much time doing things engaged with the screen rather than with a human being in classroom.
Is there any evidence that this actually fosters learning or helps in the process of teaching or learning?
Well, it depends on what you consider to be good for learning. So there's, the people who support these kinds of programs tend to talk about 21st century skills, by which they mean poking at a computer screen. They tend to being able to make a PowerPoint, being able to make a YouTube video. So they consider that, you know, they say kids are going to need this in their jobs. So it's good for them to be starting at age 6, apparently. I'm laughing because I disagree, right? You know, the technology between the time a child is 6 and when he's 18, getting out of high school, or 22, getting out of college, it is going to change so rapidly. We have no idea, you know, what kind of things kids are going to be doing. It's completely ridiculous to say, you know, teaching him a PowerPoint at age 6 is going to be anywhere near what he's going to be possibly using in 16 years. But that aside, the proponents tend to, I mean, I honestly think that it is used as a substitute teacher, you know, for to keep some kids busy and quiet while the teacher can work in depth on other kids. That's very common. To basically create quieter classrooms, easier to manage classrooms, as we have a documented increase in emotional and behavioral problems among children across the country.
Why do you say that no child needs a screen? That's a pretty absolute statement.
Yes. And when I was writing the article, you know, I thought about, you know, is this really a true thing or am I just saying this for effect? But I actually think it is literally true that nobody under at least, you know, the age of 12 and under has zero need to be looking at, you know, playing a game on a phone, playing it on a Kindle or some other kind of tablet, to be looking at YouTube videos. I mean, I've done all of those things. Well, actually, I don't give my kids my phone, but I mean, they, you know, we've looked at YouTube videos to figure out how to fix something, or they watch cartoons sometimes, you know, so of course, I've done that all with my own kids, but there is nothing, you know, I challenge anyone listening to come up with any reason that a child needs, absolutely needs to have a screen in their life. So I go through a couple in the article. You know, typically people will bring up safety. Oh, you know, what if something bad happens while my child is walking home from school? What if, you know, I don't know, he's out playing with friends and they decide they want to go out for ice cream and he can call and tell me. You know, there are ways of solving those problems, and people used to do that just 10 years ago before everybody had a cell phone. But, you know, there are ways of solving those problems without giving your child a phone at age 8 or buying him his own iPad or whatever. And so there, I just really cannot think of, and I'd love for anyone, you know, to get in touch with me if they can think of one, but I cannot think of any reason that a child needs to have any device at that age.
You say that children's screen time actually benefits parents rather than children. What do you mean by that, Joy?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so when I'm in conversation with parents, and when I, you know, see parents, when I see myself, let's be honest here, you know, I'm not immune from this or perfect. I don't always live up to my own ideals, but we use screens to get the kids to shut up. You're in the doctor's lounge, and you've been there for 45 minutes, and you've got a toddler. You're feeling like junk. Maybe, you know, I'm pregnant. I cannot stand another day. I just want to get off my feet. you know, here, guys, you know, watch something silly, you know, on YouTube. That's what parents, when we talk about and laugh and joke about ourselves, and we're embarrassed. You know, it's basically, it's we use the screens to make our kids shut up and stop bothering us almost universally.
So my wife and I were sitting in a restaurant several weeks ago. She could see one angle on a family that was sitting near us at a table with a lot of kids, and I could see a different angle. And she said, I'm just amazed how well-behaved those kids are.
Right.
But I could see that every single one of them had either a phone or a tablet in front of them. And I said, that's because they've all got a device in their hand. Of course they're being, they're completely, they don't even know they're in a restaurant.
I was at the library once working, and parents brought over their three children. I mean, I'm at one of those study tables just doing my work on my laptop. Two parents, a mom and a dad, brought over the kids. They looked to be about, maybe 11, 8, and 5. They gave them each a screen, and they left them there for the next 2 hours. You know, so I was thinking, oh my goodness, is this a substitute babysitter? Is this, you know, please get out of our house. We can't take you anymore. I didn't know what was going on, but it was really incredibly awkward. And I mean, I didn't think it was very safe. You know, anyway, so it was, and I've seen, you know, I'm sure everybody who's listening has seen things like that, you know, where you're just out and about. I've seen moms are walking down the street with their child in a stroller on a beautiful, glorious day. And instead of, you know, looking at the flowers and the trees or just singing some silly little nursery song or whatever it might be, or just walking quietly, the child is staring at the phone on the little tray in front of them in the stroller, completely missing out on the sensory and the relationship opportunities that are there literally, you know, brushing past their face.
Joy Pullman is our guest. She's managing editor of The Federalist. We're talking about going screen-free with your children. Are parents often in denial about the level of screen addiction with their kids? Concordia Publishing House's Spring Warehouse Sale is both online and in-store. Take advantage of discounted prices on many of the items you hear promoted on Issues Etc. from Friday, May 3rd through Monday, May the 6th. You'll find major cost savings on books, music, Bibles, educational resources, and more. Concordia Publishing House's Spring Warehouse Sale, cph.org, and 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. Concordia Publishing House's Spring Warehouse Sale, May 3rd through the 6th.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armed forces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armed forces.
Public schools are increasingly chaotic and undermine Christian children's faith. We need to rebuild our Lutheran schools to provide a truly Christian alternative. Redeemer Classical School is rebuilding this Christ-focused education in Fort Wayne, Indiana, teaching students to wonder at God's creation and to love their neighbors. We need you to help us give children this faithful Christian education. Donations to Redeemer Classical School go directly to providing scholarships. Visit fortwayneclassical.com/give.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Inglewood, California. Zion Lutheran, Pleasant Plains, Illinois. Peace Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Mount Olive Lutheran, Duluth, Minnesota. Bethlehem Lutheran, Parma, Ohio. Messiah Lutheran, Keller, Texas. Mount Zion Lutheran, Greenfield, Wisconsin. Emmanuel Lutheran, Eagle, Nebraska. St. Paul Lutheran, Hamel, Illinois. Our Savior's Lutheran, Ridgecrest, California. Trinity Lutheran, Fredericktown, Missouri. And Memorial Lutheran, Houston, Texas. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at the website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. We're talking to Joy Pullman of The Federalist about going screen-free with your children. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. The one and only 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference begins 6 weeks from today in Chicago. Making the Case features 30 hours of your favorite guests and topics, several worship opportunities, and a hymn sing. Join us Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th in Chicago. Don't wait to register. Attendance is limited to 500. Thanks to Lutheran Church Extension Fund sponsorship, child care is free for children 1 through 12. Meet Issues Etc., regular guests, and listeners from around the world at the 2019 Making the Case Conference, June 7th and 8th at Concordia University, Chicago. Joy, I wonder, are many parents just simply in denial about the level of screen addiction with their kids?
Yes and no. I mean, I think most self-aware people, we feel guilty about it, right? I mean, every time I, you know, panic and give my kids the Kindle, you know, I definitely feel guilty. And sometimes I decide not to feel guilty, but, you know, that's an emotional negotiation that's going on. And I'm sure, you know, plenty of other parents also feel that too. So sometimes that's there. Sometimes we decide that we're going to ignore the guilt and just do what we want. There's all kinds of things going on. But I think a lot of it is partly denial, and it's partly not having a better plan, not having learned better parenting skills. And ask me how I know, you know, this is something I'm trying to learn as myself as a parent. What I try to do is try to use the guilt as kind of an impetus, as kind of guilt is kind of your conscience speaking to you and giving you an opportunity to do something better. So rather than running away from it, it's really helpful to embrace it. I mean, I've done this about other things such as being a working mom. You know, if you ignore it or you, you know, refuse to feel guilty or whatever other thing, you're really ignoring an opportunity for personal growth to fix and address the problem. The guilt is an indicator to you that you have some work to do. Anyway, so when I feel guilty about the screens, when I'm at my best, I try to use it to motivate myself to say, okay, so how am I going to make this happen so next time I don't have to use the screen as a crutch with my kids? So, I mean, I've done things like create little baskets of toys they don't get to play with very often, and when I'm in a pinch, I pull that out. The same thing with snacks, a couple of special snacks are hiding in my cupboards for me to pull out and make sure that I, you know, buy a bunch of them when they're on sale and I just keep them there for when I need them. All kinds of little things like that, you know, tricks where when I go to the doctor's office, I bring, you know, a special bag full of new picture books from the library that my kids haven't read yet. So I know they're going to be interested and they'll sit there for a good amount of time. So when I sit down and say, I feel guilty about this, I don't want this to happen again or happen as much, it's way more positive and proactive to use that guilt to motivate you to make a better plan so that next time you don't have to be, you know, stuck there. The baby kept me up all night again. I feel like garbage. You know, don't know how I'm going to make it through this day. We're just going to pull out the Kindle again. Well, you have some, you know, you have a wider array of options than that. And you can really solve that problem without doing something that's a waste of your kids' time and really destroying opportunities for their personal growth.
Almost my entire childhood was lived. There was television, there was radio, but there was nothing else. The PC came along my latter years in high school, but my majority of my childhood was lived without any of this technology readily available. And golly, at midnight, TV went into snow and didn't start again until 5 o'clock in the morning. So
yeah.
I watched as much TV as any average suburban American kid did during the 60s. But I think back and I wonder, Joy, what did I do with all my time when I didn't have a device? And I'm looking at things like I built model planes. I played outside a lot. I sat in my room for hours on end just drawing pictures because I loved to draw when I was a little kid. I had hobbies. Talk about the role of hobbies in replacing screen time.
Now, I had a similar experience, and I am younger than you are, so by the time that I was in middle school, a personal computer and some simple games like the old Oregon Trail, Windows 95, that was going around my life, and my friends had video games and all the rest. But my parents were extremely strict about our TV time and our computer time, In fact, it was the same for my husband's family. They made their kids, I think this is a great strategy that I'm going to use once my kids start getting wise to the fact that I'm a really repressive mother. But so my husband's parents made their kids earn TV time by doing chores. You know, so they made copies of dollar bills, and you did a chore, and you earned an X amount of fake family money would buy you so much time, you know, watching television or playing on the computer. Anyway, so but my parents just, you know, had rules such as, you know, mostly dad said no when you asked, or, you know, we would have one movie a week that we're allowed to watch, you know, a half an hour little show. And so at the time, you know, I was annoyed, and I thought, you know, my parents were so unfair and all the usual immature stuff that we think. But like you said, I mean, all of that boredom was actually a blessing, a huge, massive blessing to my life, because, you know, you find stuff to do. I mean, I grew up on a farm. I had a pony, and I learned how to ride and train the pony. My brothers had dogs that they trained. I learned how to draw and how to paint and how to sew, and I still do all of that today. I crochet. I make all kinds of there's so much to life, you know, that is wonderful and thrilling and beneficial and just so much deeper and richer kind of life that's available to everybody, you know, than just sitting and being a passive consumer. And so I think really parents should not just think of the screen time in terms of, well, it's harmless. I think of it in terms of like a diet. You know, for me, screens are kind of like having a little bit of candy, right? I mean, I don't have a problem with giving my kids some candy now and then. I mean, I'm not that much of a Grinch. But really, they shouldn't just be eating candy. That shouldn't be the only thing they know how to do or that they're used to eating. You know, and there's some poor, deprived kids who are used to garbage food. And if you try to give them a great, healthy, you know, meal that's really going to nourish and help their growing bodies, they won't eat it because they're not used to eating it. You do not want your kids' minds and souls to be like that. You want their minds and souls to be used to having good food so they can discern the difference between a joyous and happy and long-lasting, productive use of their time and their talents to serve, their neighbors, and one that's just a bit of candy. So I think, you know, the amount of time that we let our kids spend on that distribution of things should be pretty much in parallel to, you know, the amount of candy that we let them eat, the amount of cotton candy and, you know, whatever else that we hand over to them. You know, that for me, that's an occasional treat, and I think screens should be treated the same way.
You mentioned some of this before, but is screen time simply a waste of time, or are there actually adverse health effects that we can observe in children who spend too much time on the screen?
Well, staring at a screen doesn't necessarily make you fat, but if you are used to doing that, you're going to be more fat simply because, you know, kids are wiggly. They jump and they run and they climb, and that's actually very important to their development. You know, all of the activity that drives mom and dad's crazy, all the banging and the shouting and the thumping and, you know, the shooting the guns and the, you know, pounding with the sticks, you know, that's actually really, really good for kids, and they need to do it in order to have a well-developed body and brain. So when you kind of short-circuit that learning, that practicing, and that expression of their physical bodies and their voices, you're really actually retarding their growth. It's not just their physical growth, it's also their mental growth, because the things that we do with our bodies actually create brain structures that are later used for kids to rest academics on. Your kids have got to move for hours and hours and hours of day, and they will naturally do that if they're not basically, you know, medicated by screens into sitting around in their youth. They develop the habit of being lazy. So, you know, it's not that, you know, your kid's going to turn into basically the people in WALL-E, you know, on the spaceship orbiting, you know, the destroyed Earth necessarily if you get, you know, let them watch a little TV now and then. But it's just the opportunity cost, the developing the habit of doing that, where you're displacing the things that they would naturally do without having the screen just make them sit and stare glassy-eyed.
How do you respond to the parent who says, look, I know where you're coming from, Joy. I agree with you in principle, but this is going to make my job much, much harder.
Well, that's basically what, suck it up. Your job is not, as a parent, isn't just to babysit the kids and be a placeholder, you know, and so while their body does all the growth, you're supposed to consciously and actively be a part of their lives, right? You know, you don't say, oh, my child will just learn about Jesus from being in the world and God is obvious from the stars. No, you take the child to church. You know, you say, you're going to memorize your catechism. I'm going to sit here, you know, and have you repeat it back to me. We're going to practice it for 5 minutes every night. You know, it is a parent's job to take pains for his or her child. And if you're not willing to do that, you're not a very good parent. But, I mean, I don't think most people listening to this need much convincing on that front. There, you know, most parents I met they're self-sacrificing. They love their kids. They work very hard to make a good life for their kids. Now, I think it's more about developing better habits, knowing, you know, that this isn't a good thing for your kids, and finally, you know, and really agreeing with reality, and then saying, okay, I mean, I'm willing to put in the work required to help my kids be better people because that's my whole job. And the other thing that I think is really important with that is that with every single parenting thing, so it's not just with screens, but, you know, one of my kids has an attitude problem, a regular one, some kind of, you know, vice that I finally realized, okay, this is a habit. I'm going to need to work on this specifically with this one child. So every time you come up with some problem with your child, it is the beginning stages of addressing it are difficult. You know, you have to have some tears. You know, you have to have some discipline. You have to work it out. And the initial stage of confronting it is a lot of work, and it's not comfortable. And I don't like it as much as any other parent doesn't like it. But you know what? When you put in that work and that investment and time and in your child on the front end, you completely reap the rewards on the back end. So my kids, for example, you know, I've spent lots of time teaching them and spending time with them doing different kinds of activities to expose them to all the different possibilities available, you know, for a little person. So now that I have done that and I've consciously thought about the activities they can do and made PlayStations for them and such around our yard, I don't have to spend as much time with them doing all of that because they already know, oh, my goodness, we built this huge castle out of blocks the other day. That was so much fun. This time I'm going to do it by myself with my brother. So my input at that time isn't needed because I did the input on the front end. It's the same thing with discipline. You teach your kids how to negotiate their problems and how to work together. And on the front end, it's a real pain in the rear end. You know, you're spending all this time listening to their ridiculous problems that they think are so important and they're just foolish. But again, you do that, they learn the skill, and then they can employ the skill by themselves without needing you. So you're basically training wheels in your kids into adulthood. And that's like the whole job of being a mom or a dad.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist. She's author of the book, The Education Invasion, and a recent column titled, Why You Should Plan a Low-Screen Summer for Your Kids. You can read it and purchase The Education Invasion under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Joy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
When we come back, listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line.
I believe in the Holy Spirit. Christians confess these words each week during the Divine Service. But have you ever wondered, who is the Holy Spirit? Join Curtis Giese, Jeffrey Oswald, Charles Geeshan, and others in the May issue of the Lutheran Witness as they consider the person and work of the Holy Spirit. Special highlights include a Bible study by Matt Richard and an original Pentecost hymn text by Mark Preuss. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
The LCMS Youth Gathering is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During April, if you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to the LCMS Youth Gathering. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Nicholas von Amsdorf was the only nobleman in Luther's inner circle, yet few people today have ever heard of him. Learn more about one of the first evangelical bishops in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April, Nicholas von Amsdorf, champion of Martin Luther's Reformation. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 and request the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Nicholas von Amsdorf.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth, Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.